This podcast is brought to you by On Track Studio.
Welcome to Mind Your Head, a space for people to share their stories, talk openly and honestly about their own mental health challenges, and to give listeners some comfort in knowing you're not alone. My aim is to give people the courage and confidence to have difficult and vulnerable conversations with loved ones, to better understand each other and to improve their own mental health. It's not easy, and it never will be, but conversations change mindsets. In this episode, we speak to Brock Day, who after experiencing the devastation of a loved one taking their own life, founded Sana Days, a health and wellness brand to help encourage people to feel the benefits that exercise can have on your mental health. Brock Day, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. I've done a fair bit of self-reflection over the last 2 years, and in particular the last 12 months. And I've realized that, especially with my life, there were a lot of moments that changed my life forever, for depending how you look at it, good or for bad, it definitely changed my life. And 10 years ago this year, you graduated from uni, decided to move to London, start your next big adventure, and then you got a phone call from your mum back home. Can you take me back to that moment?
Yeah, so yeah, as you said, finished university. That was always my plan after uni, to head to London on a 2-year working visa. So yeah, finally saved up enough money, moved overseas, and it was probably, I think, about a month into me being there. I still remember the morning. I think it was after the second State of Origin, so the day before it was a big day drinking and a big night, and then I remember just kind of waking up to a few missed calls, and especially from my best mate Ben, who was living over there at the time. And I ended up picking up one of his calls, and he just said, yeah, you just got to call your mum. And I kind of knew straight away, like, something bad was up. So I was like, yeah, too easy. And then I called mum straight away. And yeah, just the tone of her voice. And she was obviously pretty emotional. She just said, dad's done something stupid. And yeah, straight away I was kind of, I think I was just in a bit of shock. And I was like, what do you mean? And yeah, she's like, yeah, he's done something stupid. He's committed suicide. And then, yeah, I think I just kind of froze up on the phone. And yeah, mum couldn't really talk to me too much at that time, understandably. So I was just in a bit of disbelief. And I think eventually when I got off the phone to her, Ben called me back straight away. And he was just like, oh, I'm coming to get you. I've sorted out the flights. All I need you to do is just pack your bags. So then I kind of, yeah, just got my stuff ready. I think I just sat in the shower for like half an hour, just kind of, yeah, I think the main feeling was this shock. I was obviously, yeah, pretty emotional as well, but I just couldn't really grasp the whole concept of it and get my head around it. So I think in that point of time, I was just, my main focus was just getting home, just getting back to the family. And then I think a couple of hours later, Ben rocked up, had the bags packed, and then pretty much, yeah, just went straight to the airport. On the way home, I think, yeah, I can't really remember too much. I think from actually leaving London to getting back home, and the whole plane flight, I probably have no idea what I was doing. I think I was just obviously just trying to process the information, and yeah, I just try to avoid, I think, all social medias and all that, just to hold it together till I got home. And then, yeah, I think driving up the driveway, that was probably the hardest part, just kind of seeing all the cars there. And then it all just hit me at once, and I was like, yeah, fuck, this has really happened. And yeah, just walking inside and obviously seeing all the family, because I was pretty much the last one to get back. I think my sister, she was in WA at the time, so she flew home, but she was obviously there before me. And yeah, it all just hit me at once. And I think going forward, there's obviously the whole grieving process. You got all your friends and family there. It's pretty full on. Like, it's obviously great to have the whole support there from everyone. And then you got to go through the whole process of kind of organising the funerals and all that. And I think the stages of like emotions and what I went through, it was definitely, yeah, shock at first. And it's kind of the sadness that come from it all, the emotional stages. And then I think probably the next stage would have been, you know, a bit of anger and a bit of, I guess, towards dad and what he'd done. Like, how could he do that to the family? How could he leave us? And And then trying to probably more so than after that understand why it happened and, you know, why it happened to us. Or, you know, we had such a good little, a good family and a good upbringing. And, like, obviously the signs weren't really there. And I didn't have that big of an understanding around mental illness and mental health at the time. I knew he kind of battled a bit of depression on and off over the years, especially after he lost his dad. And he had a few kind of accidents and injuries over the years. And so it was kind of on and off, I think, antidepressants and all that kind of stuff. But you just never think about it happening to, you know, anyone that you know personally. And then, yeah, so once it obviously happened to me, I just had to, yeah, try and process it all. And you are finding yourself trying to find answers around why I did it, trying to look for little signs. But I think probably one of the good things was speaking to my GP, maybe, I don't know, a month or so after it happened, and he just said, yeah, listen, because he treated my dad as well. He was like, you have to know it wasn't him. Like, when he died, it wasn't him. He's like, it is an illness, it is a disease. It took over. So he's like, probably don't take anything away from him, or just know, yeah, it wasn't him that that did that. It was the disease. So I think trying to understand that was definitely helped in the recovery process.
Yeah. At any point, did you and Robbie ever chat about maybe some of the things that he was struggling with, or did he keep it quite close to his chest?
Yeah, not really. Yeah. I think that was definitely the, I think in the past, that kind of, that role he played in the family, like always worked to support the family and just being that strong character. He didn't really give off too much. He always, like, you knew him obviously pretty well. Like, he was always kind of that happy guy. He always just wanted to get around the boys. Always wanted to know what we're up to, what my friends are up to, you know. He loved having us over for drinks. And so it was pretty, yeah, it's pretty shocking to obviously realise what he'd done. But yeah, he's definitely, I think, mastered pretty well all the pain he had on the inside, and obviously got too much at the end.
Yeah. Previous to that, your knowledge and understanding of mental health, did you know much about it? Did you know much about sort of anxiety and depression? And
I think I just had like a general idea that, you know, depression, you're just sad for like a little period in your time.
Yeah.
And that, you know, you go on antidepressants or something and it makes you feel better and you kind of keep going on. But yeah, I never really learned too much about, I guess, depression and it leading to suicide and all the anxiety and all that kind of stuff as well. So yeah, it was definitely a big eye-opener for me in that sense.
I remember when you came back and I remember sort of you went straight into working at your family's supermarket that you had. And I just felt like you, on the outside, you sort of, I don't know if you grieved or you sort of just put the whole family on your back and you sort of had to do whatever you could to make sure mum's okay, make sure the family's okay. Did you feel like you had to do that? Did you feel a bit of pressure to do that?
I didn't necessarily feel pressure to do it. I think it was just something I knew I had to do, especially because my sister was living in WA and I'm the middle child, so I had a younger brother as well. So I was kind of, I guess I was just like next in line, and I've already worked at the deli before and I knew how the business ran. So it was just kind of that, I guess, initial, you know, I have to do this. I have to try and, I guess, put on a brave face and hopefully, I guess, the other family members can get a bit of strength from me doing that as well.
Yeah.
But in the same time, like, my mum had to do it as well. Like, she was in the deli, so I got a lot of strength from her fronting up as well. But in saying that, it was, it was fucking, those first couple of months, it was really hard. Like, I'd kind of just go to work and then, like, I remember just straight away, like, because a lot of the customers, it was just a local supermarket, so we had a lot of regular customers. So, like, every second customer would just ask, you know, where's Robbie?
Yeah, I remember. And, I remember being in there and because he was so loved by the community that, and he was so popular as well. That I remember being in there sometimes and people were constantly asking where Robbie was and you guys are trying to be polite about it too.
Yeah.
But, you know, like you said, every second customer you got to explain.
Yeah, exactly. And
what's happened?
Yeah, I was, and at the start it was really hard to explain like what happened. Like such as some of the people that come in and just be like, you know, I heard he took his own life. And like, I think a lot of customers didn't know I was his son as well.
Oh, right.
So yeah, that definitely really, that was really hard trying to explain it.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, at the start, there was obviously a lot of shame around it as well. Like, it was kind of, it was hard to, tell everyone that, he took his own life, because then I didn't want it to look bad on his behalf as well, and, like, the person he was, because, it wasn't him.
Did you fall into any dark days yourself during that time?
There was definitely, some dark times. Specifically remember, like, at the deli. Just sometimes we'd have like a big cold room, a big fridge, and I just had to like go out there, and I remember just like sitting on a crate or something and just crying for like 10 minutes or something, just trying to relieve a bit of the emotions that had built up from just talking to customers and stuff like that.
So
I was definitely just trying to put on a brave face, I think, for the first couple of months, and just trying to get through it just for mum's sake and my brother's sake, I think, at the same time.
What is the relationship like with your mum now, and how has it changed since?
It's obviously changed a lot. Just dealing with it afterwards, like, that was probably the hardest part, like, whether it was just, like, me home alone, and I'd kind of just hear mum, like, just crying in the bedroom or something like that. Like, you just feel so much pain, and you just feel, it's so bad for mum as well, because she's trying to run the business, and then still got us kids as well, so she's just trying to be strong for everyone. And then she, I'll just obviously hear a breakdown every now and then, and kind of just break my heart. Going forward, like, it's the strongest person I know, so I think
she is.
I've pretty much just taken like a lot of strength from her, and she kind of pushes me to keep going and staying strong. But at the same time, like, as the years kind of passed, you kind of get past that like initial grieving, and it's always hard straight away just trying to bring up memories, because, it's going to bring up a lot of emotions and stuff like that. But now it's kind of nice bringing up memories in a way, because they're always nice memories, and we kind of just like have a chat every now and then, and she'd be like, dad would love this, or,
Yeah, like, we get around for Christmas and have a few beers and stuff, and I know people would make passing comments saying, Robbie would really get a kick out of this.
Yeah, exactly.
He would really love it. And everyone sort of thinks about all those times that we were together and all the good memories that we did have.
Yeah.
And he loved the Christmas time when everyone's together and playing games.
Like, obviously when we were younger, he loved us having drinks at our house and just get around, and he loved all the banter with the boys. He'll love that side of it. So, drinking games, card games, all that kind of thing. So it's actually nice now, like, talking back on it and just bringing up those good memories. And so that's pretty much what we have now moving forward.
Yeah. So in your opinion, why is there still, do you think there's still a stigma around mental health, around suicide? I mean, there's always room for improvement, but do you think there's still a stigma, especially with men?
Yeah, there's definitely still a stigma around it. Obviously, the suicide statistics are still pretty high, and you're hearing a lot more of, like, high-profile kind of suicides and stuff a lot more. Like Paul Green from the Cowboys is a big one. It's definitely, you're hearing about it a lot more, but there is a lot more, like, awareness around it now, a lot more charities doing a lot more, and then I think there's a lot more like younger people as well that are speaking up from their experiences. So I guess that's why I'm obviously speaking from my experience to hopefully relate to someone else that might be going through something that I'm going through. And then they can draw a bit of strength and be like, there is a bit of light at the end of the tunnel. Like what this guy's going through, and he's kind of come out the other side, and he can speak openly about it. So hopefully, give a bit of strength to those that need it.
Yeah, and you mentioned earlier that you went and saw a GP just to talk about a few things. Did any sort of that counselling or therapy help? And did you guys have a family? Did you guys see a therapist as a family, or was it sort of individual?
It was kind of just individual. I just saw my local GP on the sunny coast. Then he just brought up a few things, but I've only probably recently in the last year or so actually seen a proper therapist. Looking at it now, I probably could have benefited a lot more from it like back then, because I definitely probably just put my emotions and stuff aside a little bit just to put on that brave face and try and get through those first couple of years with still having the shop and all that. I kind of wanted to just get through all that before I dealt with that. Then I guess just getting into like relationships and all that, you kind of talk about it with your partners a lot more. So I kind of felt like I didn't really need to see a therapist at that point in time.
Yeah.
Because I never really dealt with anything too dark myself. But yeah, looking back on it now, I think I would have really benefited just to talk to a therapist and
earlier on,
kind of understand a lot of, I guess, the emotions I went through, especially straight after. And
because I definitely should have, those early stages, because I remember when it happened, was back on the coast, I saw you, and then I ended up moving to New Zealand. And I don't think I've ever been through something where I had to grieve like that. And I didn't know how to. And I remember I thought I sort of was around you guys for a good couple of months before I went to New Zealand, and I thought that was sort of the grieving period. And I remember like getting to New Zealand and then being away from everyone, and just my head just wasn't on the job at all. I was just, I was in New Zealand playing, trying to play footy, but my head was back home. And I just thought like time would pass, and I never actually gave it a proper think about how much it had affected all the friends. Because that's probably the closest person that I've ever had pass away. Has it not so much surprised you, but how much the ripple effect it had on the friends, on the community? I remember being at the funeral. I've never been at a funeral where there was people lined up outside to get in. You know, they were, and it was packed. The amount of people that came in the community that came to the funeral just showed how much of an impact Robbie left.
Yeah, and that's obviously a credit to Dad and the type of guy he was. He was just a real big community man. He obviously played like rugby growing up on the sunny coast, and I think he was involved in like the surf clubs and always coaching. And yeah, he's just kind of that guy. He was always welcoming and pretty outgoing, and just loved to chat to everyone. So it was pretty overwhelming being at the funeral and just seeing how many people actually were there and showed their support.
What I really love about our friendship group is how much we all rallied behind each other and how much we rallied behind you. And it wasn't just, we've got this sort of feeling that if one of us is hurting, then we're all in this, all hurting together. And how much has that played a role in your life, not just in that situation, but sort of throughout your life of having a strong friendship group?
Yeah, that was probably another big thing. That was overwhelming and also really heartwarming when I got back. Like, it wasn't just my real close group of mates, like you and Ben and Jesse and those guys. It was kind of like the wider friend group as well, because I think I was getting visitors for kind of friends I haven't seen in years and messages. And it was really humbling just to know how many people were supporting me along that journey, and obviously moving forward as well. On the anniversary every year, I always just get a lot of messages and a lot of mates always just bring up memories and stuff like that. So yeah, it was really humbling just to know how many people obviously care about me and Dad at the same time.
Yeah, and I don't normally like to single out people, but I do want to take this time to mention two of our good mates that I know that have had a huge impact on you throughout your life. And the first one is Jesse, who's one of a kind. I don't think there's anyone else quite like Jesse. Very passionate and straight talking, and if you're a dickhead, he'll tell you you're a dickhead. Every time I'm around him, we always have a laugh and good fun, and he's always got some funny stories. And the other one is Benny, probably one of the most loyal friends, so generous with his time, and someone that you know that is always going to have you back.
And like that's one thing I'm always be so super grateful for, is having Ben overseas there with me at the time. Like, I just don't know how I probably would have done it without him, you know. He kind of just gave me instructions, and he just held strong, because he obviously knew I was just crumbling on the inside. So he was just doing everything he can to get me back home. So
yeah, I spoke to Benny about that moment in London, and he said that was, for him, that was probably one of the hardest things that he had to see, was you and trying to get your mind off something that it was impossible to get your mind off.
Yeah, exactly.
And didn't know what to say to you. He didn't know, and he's always the one that's trying to make the situation better. Benny's always the one that if you're out, he'll be trying to usher people to the dance floor or trying to get more drinks into people.
Just be the hype man.
The hype man. And he said he was just, he was trying his hardest to get your mind off it, but he knew that it was impossible. And he said it was just the hardest thing to see you go through that. I know that I don't think you would want anyone else with you in that situation than Benny. Exactly, I think,
It was probably worked out in the best case in that sense, having him over there with me at the time of it happening, and just having his support. Like as you said, like we probably spoke a couple of words to each other on the plane or whatever.
But
just having him like there, and I think he just said, just if you need a talk, you need anything, like I'm right here, kind of thing. So just having that there, definitely helped me get home and back to the family.
And what I was touching on earlier with like handling my grief, I was living in New Zealand and I was struggling, and I already planned a trip. I think you know this story. I already planned a trip to go to New York, to go to America, but I was in New York for a little bit, and Benny ended up going back to London. So we sort of we're in Sunny Coast for a few months with you, and then he went back to London, I went back to New Zealand. I had a little chat to him. I think we were both struggling being away from home and probably not handling the grief as well as we should have, not knowing how to either. I think both of us had never lost someone that close to us before. Yeah, I was in New York, and Benny surprised me and flew to New York and surprised me in Times Square.
Yeah.
And I don't cry too much, but I think when he did that and he surprised me at Times Square, I did start crying, and I think he started to get a bit emotional, and we both didn't probably realize how much we needed that.
Yeah.
And how much that we're away from you guys, away from all the family, and trying to deal with this on our own. And then when he did that, we both just got a bit emotional, and it let out a bit of, emotion that was sort of building up.
Yeah.
And that's something that, I'll never forget. That's something that really touched me from Benny. And I know I spoke to Jesse, and maybe you're aware of this or not, but he was so conscious of always coming into the deli and seeing you.
Yeah.
He was saying to Benny that he made such a conscious effort to make sure that whatever job site he was working on at Smoko, he'd always come into the deli. And
I think it's those little things that, that really add up. You don't really think about it at the time, but then you look back on it, and that's just good to hear. You got such a good friend group that obviously care and love you and then want to support you through that tough time.
Yeah. Is that something that you're really proud of, that sort of connection that we've got with each other?
Yeah, like I've always been super, super grateful and proud of our friend group, especially because we've, been friends from such a young age, and we all stay in contact, but we've all kind of gone our separate ways over the years, but we always kind of stay in contact, and you can just kind of pick up where you left off every time you see each other.
Yeah, I love that.
And you just, obviously if anything goes wrong, we're all just going to rally together and be there for one another.
Is there something that maybe you still struggle with at the moment that you're trying to work on?
I've always probably had like a bit of self-doubt, a bit of like kind of a confidence maybe issue moving forward. And I don't know whether that's from that or you can't really pinpoint it, I suppose. But I'm always trying to work on myself and develop myself emotionally, physically, spiritually as well. So
Is that something you've learned about yourself during this whole process, is learning about your emotions and your feelings and that sort of thing?
Yeah, like especially for me, because I wouldn't say I'm like a real emotional guy. So trying to work out, I think that's what's a good thing about seeing a therapist. You kind of look back on big events, and then she'll kind of ask you like, how did that make you feel? And then it kind of just triggers your memory, and you kind of go back to those moments, and you're like, oh, it made me feel this way. And then she's like, why do you reckon it made you feel that way? It just gets you thinking about it a lot more, I think. And it's definitely helped me moving on.
Yeah, nice. Has your outlook on life changed?
Put
things in perspective a little bit?
Yeah, for sure. I guess you just never know when someone's moment's going to be the last moment. Just kind of never take anything for granted, and I guess taking opportunities when they arise as well. Especially me, kind of the last couple of years, I've taken a few opportunities, and I'm super, super happy that I have, because it's just put me in a way better space, mentally and emotionally, I think.
I guess your non-negotiables, your pillars to living a healthy and full life, what would they be?
So for me personally, I've got a few. Exercise is a big one, sleep, nutrition, and then we got connection, gratitude, and purpose. So I can probably touch on, I guess, all those little pillars.
Yeah. Um,
Exercise definitely was a massive one. I think straight after losing Dad as well, I kind of got back into the gym and just started feeling a lot better, having a bit of structure, I think, routine in my life. Because yeah, that's probably like the first 3 weeks after, I was obviously all over the shop. I don't think I left the house. Just eating whatever. You're just trying to get through. So I think just getting back into the gym, just taking that small step, just gave me a little bit of structure around my life. And then yeah, I guess like since then, I've kind of just developed all these other little tools for me personally that help with my mental health. Sleep was probably a big one. Like when I was younger, I'd always stay up late and wake up late. So my kind of whole life cycle's changed a little bit since then. I go to bed earlier, wake up earlier. I love having a good morning routine just to set up my day. Then nutrition, I suppose if you eat fast food, you don't feel too good afterwards. So I have a big focus on nutrition now. So just try and eat foods that make me feel good and that are good for me as well, especially around training. That helps me. Connection a lot. As I said, having a good friend group around you, that's super important. And I do a lot more, I guess, go to a lot more community groups now. So whether it's like running clubs or little exercise groups, just meeting new people, I think, and just broadening that friend circle. I just love like meeting new people and kind of hearing their stories.
Yeah.
And then the gratitude, just those little simple kind of little exercises you can do every day, you know, just say like three things you're grateful for, or in the morning, just waking up and just, you know, saying today is going to be a good day, and just stopping to appreciate, I think, the little things throughout the day that make you feel good. And then purpose. I think mentally when I wasn't at my best, it was probably when I didn't have much purpose in my life, especially like I think career related. I was kind of just doing hospital jobs, and I always kind of had, I guess, ambitions, but I wasn't really driven towards them at all. And I was just going through the motions, and just that feeling of being lost, that really just threw me off a little bit. I always kind of need to be working towards something, or whether that's, you know, studying, working towards a trip overseas, I don't know, working towards like a fitness goal, like something like that. I always kind of needed a bit of purpose in my life just to keep me going. I think that quote, the top of a mountain's the bottom of another mountain.
I
think that really resonates with me. You do something and you kind of, you achieve it, and then you're like, all right,
on to the next.
What's next?
Yeah.
Otherwise I kind of get caught in that limbo period and get a bit lost.
Yeah. I love that. What's your understanding of mental health now? I know you've done a fair bit of education and you're a mental health first aider. So
yeah, I guess since Dad's passing, that really just triggered my interest in it. And, probably not more so understanding why he did it, because I don't think anyone will ever really know what kind of headspace he was in, and his thoughts around it all. So, but it was more just, moving forward. I think it just being in the media a lot around mental health, hearing about friends that are going through stuff, little brother, he goes through a little bit of stuff as well. So I think I was just like, I just need to learn a bit more about it and try and equip myself with some tools that if anyone is kind of struggling around me, I can try and help out. So yeah, I only recently did a mental health first aid course, but yeah, that was really helpful, especially in trying to bring up the tough conversations with people, you know, if they are having those suicide tendencies, and how to try and navigate them towards help.
Yeah. And some key things, I think you touched on it, your pillars for living a healthy life. Are they some key things that we all can take out of that and improve our own mental health when it comes to, I guess, nutrition and having a purpose? And I know gratitude is a big one. That's something that I practice from my journey, is being grateful for just the little things that you sometimes overlook.
Because we definitely get caught up in the rat race sometimes, and I think you're always just trying to plan ahead. What's the next thing? But you don't really just take a step back and just get in that present moment and like kind of look around and what you've got and what you've achieved, and just really appreciate and I think be proud of yourself.
Yeah. And you touched on your passion and your purpose. Would that be your new, I guess, well, not new, but is it Sana Days, your new brand?
Yeah. Going into Sana Days, that was probably, I think it was 3 years ago. About 3 years ago I started Sana Days. So it took a little while to really find that purpose and passion. We did a with Ben actually and my younger brother. We did a team triathlon and raised money for Beyond Blue up at Noosa. I think that was just a light bulb moment. I think we raised over $5,000, which is great. And then just the whole experience, doing it with close friends. And I just felt really good after the event. And I kind of just went home and just thought about it. And I was like, oh, what if I can, recreate this feeling and try and give that to other people as well. So I never really had a real big game plan for Saturdays. It kind of all just kind of started piecing together as the time went on. So I just kind of thought of the name, got a bit of a plan, got some logos and stuff done up by my sister. And then, we did another triathlon with some mates. I think it was Mulba, like a sprint triathlon. And a few of us wore the Sana branding and the suits and that. And then, from then, I kind of just started piecing together the connection between exercise and mental health. Fast forward till now, I've kind of done a lot of events over the couple of years. There was no real specific channel I wanted to go down. It was just trying to get people moving and feeling good. Mm. So we did a lot of boot camps and Pilates. But at the moment, we're doing got the run clubs. And looking to do a lot more around the community in terms of gym workouts and stuff. The back end of last year, we got it registered as an actual charity.
Mm. Awesome.
So that was, that's a big step in the right direction for the company, Sana. I wasn't, when I started, I never really thought of it as becoming a charity. But as time went on, I was pretty much just operating as a not-for-profit. And it kind of just made sense taking that next logical step. And I know there's a lot of, mental health charities out there promoting awareness, and they have the kind of educational programs through schools and workplaces and all that kind of stuff. So I kind of want to be a little bit different, trying to have a bit more of, a niche in that market and do something a bit more proactive. And that's where the promoting physical activity came in.
Yeah.
Because it was something over the years, especially after losing Dad, that just helped provide that structure and actually just made me feel good. And it definitely kept me on track, I think, mentally. And then all the other aspects of your life pretty much improve, I reckon, from physical activity. Usually that sleep and then nutrition, and then you got that purpose behind your training if you're training towards something. So, it kind of spirals on to every other aspect of your life as well.
Mm. And what advice would you give to people that have experienced something similar, have maybe been in a similar situation to yours?
Yeah, it's pretty hard at the time to see light at the end of the tunnel, especially losing someone of so much importance. To me, it wasn't just a dad. It was a best friend, a mentor, someone I always looked up to my whole life. And for them to leave that way, that was probably the hardest part to process. Obviously, you don't get to say goodbye. It's just, the click of a fingers. You got your whole life changes forever. But I think just going through, obviously, the grieving process and just allowing yourself time to grieve. And then you're definitely speaking with someone probably outside of your friendship and family circle. Maybe someone with a bit more experience in that area of mental health. I think they can definitely help out and give you some pointers moving forward. And just time, the pain's never going to go away. It's, it's there with me every day. I think about it every day, but time definitely does help. Yeah, I think just having that support network as well and being able to lean on them whenever you are feeling down, and just making sure, I think you're reaching out to your friends and try not to isolate yourself too much as well, because, you can get into that little bubble and just, you don't want to see anyone. You just kind of want to be on your lonesome. But I think, it was probably about 3 weeks. I think I was just, kind of just isolate myself at home. And because I guess you didn't want to go out and face the reality and deal with all those tough questions and conversations. And I guess people kind of feeling sorry for you as well. I think Ben, one morning he just came around and he was like, oh, let's just go for a swim or something real simple, just get out of the house pretty much. Mm. And I think that was probably a big step in the right direction, just taking that initial step to get out of the house and face the world again.
Yeah. And I've got a closing tradition on the podcast.
Yep.
And I actually don't ask the last question. I get a family, a loved one, a friend, they come in to ask the last question.
Oh, yep.
So I've got Rebel.
Oh, yep.
Rebel sent something in.
That's my sister.
Rebel, yeah, Brock's sister. She was wondering if Brock ever thinks about how much genetics plays a role in regards to depression and the thought that knowing maybe one day it might just take a hold of him later in life. Does that impact the choices he makes in his life?
Not so sure of genetics, but yeah, definitely sits in the back of my mind. Obviously, Dad, you're dealing with depression and the suicide and all that. But I think my knowledge around it these days, especially kind of working in that field now, I've kind of just built up over the years what I think's a good toolkit for my mental health. And especially taking that step to see a therapist. And I think I've got a lot of, I guess, warning signs I can look out for now. So I think, yeah, if I ever, I guess, dip with my personal experience in mental health, I think I do have that toolkit I can turn on, and I'd pretty much, yeah, just probably see a therapist straight away, or just let someone I know, you know, I'm struggling a little bit, and yeah, I can work on it from there.
And then we've got your mum.
Oh, yep.
Oh, Dad?
I thought it was just one.
She just wanted to let you know how proud she is of you and what you're trying to do in memory of Dad and the positive effect that he has and what he's trying to achieve in the world of men's mental health. And that she would try, that your mum would try to support you in any way she could. Just keep going. You're doing great. All your efforts and hard work to raise awareness and build community won't go unnoticed.
Sounds like something mum would say.
Yeah. And one last thing, your favourite memory of Robbie.
Favourite memory. I was pretty fortunate with my upbringing. He was always super supportive of anything we did as kids. Like, he was always helping out with rugby. And then we got motorbikes, and we'd always go out motorbike riding. So I think those are probably the memories I cherish the most, just because, yeah, we just go out motorbike riding. And I think I just saw the joy and how happy that made him. And that obviously pushed on to us kids. And, yeah, I just loved going out there and just kind of disconnecting. And you just sit around the campfire and have a couple of beers, just talk about life. So yeah, those kind of memories always are going to stay with me forever, I think.
Yeah, love it. Thanks, Brock.
Oh, thanks for having
me. Thanks for
coming on. Oh, no worries, guys. I hope the audience can take a bit from this.
Yeah, thank you. Cheers.